Ms. Hogg, go ahead.
Go. Thanks, Tim.
And please say your name at the start of the file so everybody knows.
Great. Thank you for the introduction, everybody. My name is Tim Schmidt from the USCCA. Is that good, Charles?
A little higher.
Okay.
Just pull straight up. That's it.
Is that good?
Yeah, it's good.
I feel like I should be singing with this fancy microphone here. Okay. Hello, everybody. Welcome. My name is Tim Schmidt with the USCCA. Would you guys mind closing that door in the back? Thank you very much. I've got 15 minutes. I'm going to make this short and sweet. I got about 10,000 words, so if you want to do the math, I'm going to be talking really fast. Thanks a lot, Alan, for inviting me here to speak. This is an honor to be in a room of like-minded, responsibly armed Americans. Love it. I wish, really wanted to be here for the entire weekend. Unfortunately, my wife and oldest son, Tim Jr., were up at Michigan Tech University doing kind of the pre-college thing, so I was Mr. Mom yesterday. And just to give you one funny quick story about that, so one of the things I had to do was I had to take my 11-year-old fifth grader to a football game. Now, this is a guy that never was really into football at all. And all of a sudden this summer, he's like, Dad, I'm ready to play football. So, of course, I'm thinking, awesome, finally, I'm going to have a kid that plays football. But the thing is, you know, because he was never into it, he never really knew much about the sport. And so a few weeks ago, he comes home from practice. Now, he's a big guy, kind of like me, so he's a lineman, okay? And so he's still learning all these ins and outs of football. Sten says to me, Dad, I got good news. You know, the coach has got me in a different position now. I'm like, oh, great, that's great, son. He said, I'm on offense. I'm like, all right, well, what position is it? He said, well, Dad, it's I'm the middle. I'm like, I looked at him like, the what? The middle? Are you confusing? Maybe you're like the middle linebacker? He goes, no, Dad, the middle. You know, the guy that has the ball and snaps it. I'm like, son, that's called the center. So that's one quick story. One other quick story before I get into all the concealed carry statistics. So this is kind of like, so I want to paint this picture for you. So I live in a small town of West Bend, Wisconsin. That's where the headquarters of Delta Defense and the USCCA is. It's about 30,000 people, very, you know, quiet community, about as plain Midwestern as you can imagine. So I get home from work last Wednesday, and my wife says, oh, Tim, I forgot to remind you, we're going to a fundraiser tonight. Now, I hear that quite often, and I'm like, oh, honey, really? She goes, oh, yeah, this is going to be a good one. It's the West Bend Beautification Society. Like, what the heck is that all about? So she goes on to explain that, well, this is just a group of people that raise money to plant pretty flowers around town. So I can think of about 9,000 things I'd rather do than go to this fundraiser. And then she takes it to the next level, and she goes, well, Tim, there's one more thing. You're one of the 7 people that has to come up with something to auction to raise money for this thing. So, like, you gotta be kidding me. Are you serious, honey? But that's okay. I'm a good husband, so I, like, rolled with it. We went down to this event. We're in a room about this size. There's probably 200 people there. They're all the big muckety mucks from town. They're the bankers and the lawyers and blah, blah, blah. Everybody's sitting at these tables, and the event's going on, and all these different, the 6 other people who are auctioning off things, they're auctioning off plants and trees and tickets to boring things, and I'm like, oh, this is just, I mean, I can't, this is terrible. But no, at my heart, I'm a very competitive person. So I'm thinking, all right, if I have to do this, I'm going to do it right, and I'm going to win this auction. I'm going to come up with a package that gets auctioned off for the most amount of money. So guess what it is? So I walk up. So I'm literally standing just like this. I'm talking to all these people, and they all know what I do because we moved the business in downtown West Bend, a little bit of a pariah because I'm the gun guy, which is fine. And so I get up there, and my auction item, I slowly paint this picture. I'm going to pick you up in my black pickup truck. And in the back of that truck is going to be my 85-pound Barrett 50-caliber semi-automatic sniper rifle with a $3,000 scope on top. And sitting next to that rifle is going to be a big box of 100 rounds of match-grade 50-caliber ammunition. And we're going to go up to my range, and we're going to shoot that rifle all afternoon. And I paint the picture of this people. Now, half the people in the room are just, their jaws are dropped down here. They can't believe that I'm offering this. And the other half are just, they're flat out excited because they want to do this with me. I see a few husbands kind of going like this, looking over at the wife, thinking, huh, honey, you think maybe I can get that? But the bottom line is that when the whole auction was over, most of the items went for, you know, $500, $600, $700. The afternoon at the range of the 50 went for $2,000. So of course I won. So what does that tell you? What that tells you is that even in sleepy old little Midwestern down West Bend, Wisconsin, hey, man, it is cool to shoot guns. Yeah. Okay, concealed carry. Obviously, I'm preaching to the choir. Everybody knows that the modern-day concealed carry revolution started in 1988. And someone mentioned her from the stage before. Marion Hammer was the down in Florida. She was the horsepower behind that. And, of course, you know, the media, all they talked about back in 1988 was like, oh, my goodness, Florida's going to turn into the gunshine state. There's going to be blood in the streets. You know, every time someone has a discussion about, well, hey, that was my parking spot, there's just, you know, people, everybody's going to shoot themselves. Of course, we all know that didn't happen at all. So over the next, let's see here, from 1989 to 1998, 22 states passed concealed carry laws. Florida was the pioneer, this huge concealed carry revolution. And then 2002 to 2011, 7 more states. So about, 30 states, end of 2011, what I would refer to as the good states, had fantastic shall-issue concealed carry laws. Moving on a little bit further, you know, there are a few states in the Midwest that took a little extra time, a.k.a. Illinois and Wisconsin, the silly state that I live in. But finally, we got that all dialed in. So where does that put us today? So right now, in the United States, there are about 11.1 million people that have concealed carry permits, 4.8% of the population. I think that's fantastic. Now, FBI crime stats show that since this widespread adoption of concealed carry, violent crime has dropped over the country 22%. Now, how can that be? How can it be that all these extra people have guns, but violent crime has dropped? I mean, that doesn't make sense, right? Duh, it makes complete sense. The bottom line is that when people are carrying concealed, the bad guys don't know who has the gun. There's an amazing deterrent effect, because the one language that bad guys understand is that they don't want to get shot. And a firearm is the ultimate tool to make an even playing field, right? I mean, what kind of a tool could an 85-year-old grandmother be given so that she could have a chance against a guy like me? My 50, yes. A gun is pretty much the only thing. And so that's fantastic. I mean, I just looked this up, even in Chicago, since the very first issuance of the very first concealed carry permit in Chicago, burglary and car theft are down 26%, which is fantastic. I think, good job, Illinois. A round of applause for that. Okay, so the bottom line is that over the last 15, 20 years, there's been great news about concealed carry in the United States. So where do we go from here? Where do we go from here? Now, this is going to be a little controversial, but that's okay. That's kind of the way my whole life's been. I'm cool with that. Let's look at a story here. Shanine Allen, she's in the news right now. Here's a woman, single mom, 2 little boys. She gets mugged in Philadelphia. She gets mugged again in Philadelphia. She gets mugged again in Philadelphia. What does she do? Finally, she says, this is BS. I'm going to get a gun. I'm going to get a concealed carry permit. I'm going to get trained. I'm going to do everything right. I'm going to follow the letter of the law in Philadelphia. And that's not easy in Philadelphia. But she does just that. 3 weeks after she gets that first concealed carry permit, she's driving on the freeway, takes the wrong turn, ends up in New Jersey, gets pulled over for a traffic violation, not very far away from Philadelphia. She gets arrested, spends 40 nights in jail. Now she's facing 3.5 years in prison. All because she wanted to protect herself and her kids. That is absolutely terrible. And I'm going to go out on a limb here. I know some of you are going to love what I'm about to say. But others, maybe not so much. But that's okay. This is what happens when we give permission to a government to grant us inalienable rights with these goofy little concealed carry cards. Name one natural-born right, one other natural-born right that you have to beg to get permission to use, that you have to kiss the ring of the king to exercise. Being able to defend yourself is a natural-born, God-given, inalienable right. Now, does it come with responsibility? Of course it does. Do we have to be trained and well-prepared to do that? Of course we do. But the bottom line is that there are states that are pushing this envelope, New Hampshire, Arizona, Alaska. They all have what I like to refer to as constitutional carry. And as far as the USCCA is concerned, that's the direction that we're going to be pushing concealed carry legislation. Okay, a few more stories. Now, I realize that some of you in the audience have been living the responsibly armed lifestyle for years, maybe decades, maybe practically your entire life. And I applaud you for that. I also realize that some of you in the audience may be relatively new to living the armed lifestyle. Maybe you just took your first concealed carry class. Maybe you just bought that first home defense shotgun, and you're not sure even where to store it. Maybe that's the case. I want to take you back 15 years and kind of give you a little picture of what it was like for me to go through my, what I refer to as my self-defense awakening. Okay? So it happened to me practically on the day that my first kid was born. Tim Jr. was born. I remember sitting in the hospital holding that little guy in my arm 16 years ago. And I remember feeling this unbelievable weight of responsibility on my shoulders. And it was heavy. But I knew it was good. It was the right weight. And the first part was like, holy crap, I need to be able to provide for my wife and kid. It's my responsibility. But then the next thing, even more powerful, was I realized that I was not in a position to be able to protect and defend these people. And looking down at this little baby, it practically took my breath away. And that was really where my first journey began. You know, like the good engineer that I was, I dove headfirst into researching every gun, every holster combination, every law, the best training, all the different things that you need to do to become that responsibly armed citizen. And, you know, I was all in. It took me probably 3 or 4 years before I first started carrying myself. And that was when I thought to myself, you know, there's gotta be a better way to do this. And not just all of the challenges of the learning, but also, I mean, there were a bunch of experiences that I went through that quite frankly, they weren't very good. For example, I remember the first time I walked into a gun shop, right? Here I am, this engineer. Oh, hello. And, now I definitely have to be on time. And I'm going into this gun shop, and I walk up to the counter, and I think I know a lot, but you know what? This guy could tell that I was wet behind the ears. And you know what? He made me feel like an idiot. He went out of his way to make me feel like an idiot. Now, I'm going to guess that there's probably a few people in this room that have experienced that as well. It's actually quite common in the gun industry, which is BS. It's terrible. And so that kind of plant, you know, those experiences, that deep dive into all the information really planted the seeds of the formation of the USCCA. I figured there's got to be other people like me. There's got to be other brand new fathers, people willing to take their responsibility to protect and defend their loved ones. And if that's the case, I'm going to get them together and I'm going to give them more information. So the bottom line is that in 2003, the United States Concealed Carry Association did not exist. No members, no customers, no nothing. And now, 10 years later, we're just celebrating our 10-year anniversary. There's 1.4 million people get the Concealed Carry Report every single Friday morning at about 10 a.m. 120,000 people get Concealed Carry Magazine delivered to their doorstep. And 70,000 active USCCA members get up to $1.1 million in self-defense insurance. Delta Defense is headquartered in West Bend, Wisconsin. We now employ 56 people. And we've been on the Inc. 5000 list for the last 3 years in a row. One of the fastest growing companies in the United States. So that's exciting. But I guess the whole point of saying this is that, you know, over these last 10 years of being in this business, right? So I've talked to all sorts of people. I talked to the reporters that we're just listening about and that don't like me and don't like what I do. But even those people have the same common interest. And that interest is they want safety and security for their loved ones. They want that. But now what I've discovered is that it's a very rare person that's actually willing to accept that responsibility as their own and to live that armed lifestyle and be that responsibly armed American. And once I realized this, I realized that this is my calling. I was put here on this earth to help people do that, to help that small group of people that are willing to live that lifestyle, to be that responsibly armed American. And so my mission is to educate, train, and be willing to fight for people like that. Now, I suspect there's a few of you in this room right now. And I just want to tell you that I promise that in your darkest hour, I hope this never happens, but if it does, and you're forced to pull that trigger, I will have your back. Okay, one last story. Do I have time for one last story, Miss Enforcer?
Make it good.
Okay, this will be fast. So So one more picture I'm going to paint for you. So at Delta Defense Headquarters, which of course owns and runs the USCCA, we have, like I said, 56 employees in little old West Bend, Wisconsin. We bought the museum right next to the library. There were protests outside. They're thinking that we were going to shoot all the kids at the library. It didn't happen. So in our call center, we have about 18 people sitting there answering the phones, essentially 10 hours a day. And, on a busy day, we'll get 1,000 calls. So there's a lot going on in this area, you know, a big call center. And so once a month, I actually sit down and answer calls myself. I do this because I want to show support to my member service agents that I love what you do, and I realize how hard it is, to sit there and answer calls all day. And so I do that for one hour a month. And I gotta tell you, the day up, leading up to when I do that, I get nervous. Cause that's a hard job. So one day, I'm sitting there taking phone calls in my 1 hour a month. Phone rings. I answer, "Hello, thank you for calling the USCCA. This is Tim speaking. Can I help you?" Guy on the other line says, "Well, Tim, this is Tim Schmidt." I'm like, "Yes, sir, Tim Schmidt." He goes, "Huh, alright, well, I need you to change my password, for the website." "Okay, no problem. I can do that." So I type it in a little bit, change his password, everything's squared away. And then he says, "Well, I got a question for you, young man." I'm like, "Okay." He goes, "Tim, what do you believe in?" And I said, "Excuse me?" He said, "You heard me. What do you believe in?" I kind of stammered a little bit, but by that time it was too late. He had got me, right? He had asked a question, and I didn't have the answer. I felt embarrassed. My face got red and flush, and I said, "Well, sir," but then thank goodness he kind of let me off the hook, and we talked a little bit, and then he hung up. And so the whole rest of that time I was answering phone, and quite frankly, the rest of the day, it stuck in my head. What the heck is wrong with me? Someone asked me what I believe, and I don't even have an answer. What's up with that? So I go home, have dinner with the kids, help my daughter with her math, kids go to bed, and I thought, you know, this question this man asked me was driving me crazy. And so I go downstairs into my bunker underneath the basement. I'm sorry, underneath the garage, so it's like concrete on the top, bottom. It's fantastic. There's lots of guns. You guys would all love it. I guarantee you. So I sat down, and I sat at my desk, and that question, "What do you believe in, Tim?" was just resonating. So I sat there, and I wrote these words. "I believe that most people are inherently good. I believe that when given the chance, most people will do the right thing. I believe that most Americans will do anything for their families. I believe that true Americans love their country. I believe in God. I believe that opportunity is usually disguised as hard work. I believe that the free enterprise system is a gift from God. I believe that the ability to forgive and forget will set you free. I believe that the harder you work, the luckier you get. I believe in liberty. I believe in choosing to be happy. I believe in accepting responsibility for everything that happens to me. I believe that every challenge or obstacle is an opportunity to become a better person. I believe that life can be tough, but at the end of the day, life is what you make of it. I believe in my family. I believe that evil exists. It just does. I believe it is my responsibility to protect all that is good from all that is bad. I believe in preparing for the worst while expecting the best. I believe in the natural born and inalienable right to self-protection. I believe that the man or woman who shirks their duty to defend and protect simply doesn't understand their true responsibility as a God-fearing and freedom-loving American. I believe in myself. I believe that a gun cannot be good or bad. It's simply a thing. It's a tool. I believe that the founders of our country liberated themselves, their families, their country from tyranny with these tools we call guns, and thus started the greatest experiment in freedom the world has ever seen. I believe the statistics that tell us responsibly armed, law-abiding Americans use guns over 2,739 times every single day to defend the lives and honor of their loved ones. I believe in being peaceful and avoiding conflict at all costs. But when that conflict comes after me and pushes me in a corner, I believe in fighting as if the lives of my wife and children depend on it, because they do. This is what I believe.